Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about, hopefully, a soothing chat about the coronavirus and the world pandemic to some expat friends in California and in Germany. So I'm just going to cover a few of the world affairs, but hopefully be a much more relaxing and reassuring thing. Now, reassuring review of things that are going along. And there's a sort of a genuine interest about the way things are in Australia from ex-Australians trying to look at it. And you want to describe how it is without creating panic. And for instance, now when I get an email, I leave it a day or two of just thinking, you know, how to respond in the least horrible way. So that was a sulfur-crested cockatoo going across. You'll hear the odd birds. It's not as an intense birds here. They've when there were drought on the birds, it was just absolutely like chock-a-block full of birds. You just couldn't move. There's so many birds here because they sort of came into the more watered areas, but now it's sort of a bit more wound down. And also the little primary school I'm opposite has got less students, less mess, and so we have these beautifully coloured red birds, Rosella birds, which are sort of so common they're almost rats, but you know, they're sort of this idyllic, brightly coloured red and blue bird. It's something, you know, out of some sort of nursery rhyme, sort of fantastically coloured bird, little parrots coming along. And they're fairly intelligent and sociable things, the various parrots, but we've just noticed that they haven't been around as much. So that was just an aside. Hopefully that's a bit calming to go through. And I suppose it's for one or two of you, it's a bit unusual subtly to hear this in a podcast. So I'll give a little bit of my background. I've had to do lots and lots of podcasts so I can speak continuously. So I've had some sort of brain trauma, and I had to no matter how far away the object was, I had to just get up every day, dust myself off, pick myself up, and pick myself up, dust myself off, and get going. And it's been hard. So initially, I had to learn how to podcast while walking because there just wasn't enough hours in the day to do mental rehab and physical rehab. I had to combine the two and sort of work out how to go. And I couldn't spend the time producing a podcast because that took away from the amount of hours in the day I had to do for rehab. So initially the rehab was focused on memory, structure, programming, speaking, involved also breathing. So my first, some 2,000 podcasts ago, that seems a long time ago, I would be just really struggling to breathe, and the recording quality was dreadful. And so I've just been pushing away and just quietly preparing a lesson a day. I have gone into a stint of electronics, but I've also got to be aware that sort of adapt to the situation. So doing electronics meant I had too many wires and too much junk around the place. And for people who didn't know what was going on, they'd say, well, why didn't you pack it? And of course, packing it up is the worst thing you could do because you unpack it and you get a mental map of where things are. With the brain stuff, it's a bit hard to find again. But overall, it's improving, getting strategies to go ahead. And doing the podcast, I have had to think about a sort of topic, write a sort of topic, and then I've had to practice typing during the day just to type it up. And also a bit of programming, LabVIEW, that type of stuff, robotics programming to get it going forward. So push that along. And another thing is it's social isolation. You could really say that a stroke is social isolation because this is way ahead of I'm sort of ahead of the curve in that once you lose some of your social ability, you lose your friends really, really quickly. And in the dead of the night, it's just you and your rehab to go across. It's sort of void. And it also means that you look at the news, you're sort of very much by yourself. You look at the news and you see Italy, America, Germany and stuff like that, and you go across. And being an analytical person, I sort of look at the curves, look at the likelihood of things going ahead. And I should perhaps say that I used to teach pandemic in class, so I've been a school teacher. So I left high-powered research, well, high-powered research and startups to start teaching, and found that I had a lot to offer, but the system really didn't want me producing in that direction. They wanted sort of standard, run-of-the-mill, their friends, anyone can teach is the fundamental aspect of it. But nonetheless, I did teach a lot of pandemics, and I actually learned a lot from the students who themselves played the pandemic game, and they would say, oh, look, there's a game, a computer game called Pandemic, and they would say, let them, the last half hour of a lesson, play Pandemic, because I'd tell them in advance you're going to play it, and then you'd hear them discussing the strategies and how to evolve the virus and stuff like that. And the strategy was, you know, the strategy was to grow it there. They taught me more than that, but I sort of also taught them social transition, transmission. So you'd have them have a social encounter. So this is years and years before, and I suppose I can give a bit of a background. Let's go off from the rays of hope and stuff like that. So looking at the United States, it's something which is something really, some aspects of it are really hard for an Australian external person. Depends what sort of glasses you have on. Very hard to look at. So the United States, aspect of it is going in. The various stories you see, I think the the turning point for me, which got me very anxious very early on, is Donald Trump, who said that couldn't we use the flu vaccine for coronavirus? And having taught students, I knew immediately, well, that person is not going to be able to manage this. And you know, how do you, what is the dynamic going on? Because often in student groups, the more powerful, charismatic person would have the wrong idea and lead their group of students down the wrong direction. Sort of, there's this worry, and realizing that there are real lives and real economies and stuff like going on like that. Like, you can sort of have this Freudenschaft sort of joy in someone else's discomfort, but really that only lasts about 30 seconds, and then your compassion comes along. And this is perhaps my failing, in is that I've very swap to, you know, sort of concern about other people. So I felt very concerned for the United States coming across. And then the more recent displays of Donald Trump showing the media professionals his media presentation and not realising that that would be offensive to the media people watching it, that they'd just find that just intolerable. And again, in school and stuff like that, the if a student had a sexist or racist view, it was, or religious view, it was very hard to manage the dynamics. The amazing thing is that the other students would be far more accepting of it, and they'd be concerned not about the view. Now, I suppose I should say, and a lot of the students, as they got to know you, would ask you very deep questions. They said, "Look, sir, we want to know whether you believe in God." And I would answer quite honestly, for myself, practically no, but I think it's very important for people to be good and have a way of thinking about being good. So I think in as much that it does create good, I very much approve of it, which is actually a genuine aspect of it. So from, I suppose, this teaching sort of view, there's not the, if you go in and say, "Oh, look, you've done a bad job," you will destroy the morale and they won't be able to get across. You'll break down relationships, and, you know, these are the various bad things. So you see the United States, I suppose the other horrible thing is, along that line, is Trump cutting the funding to the WHO, World Health Organization. Now, there is a fair amount of anti-communist party propaganda about the place by Falun Gong. Sort of, they've poked a whole lot of people seriously in the eye, like the Falun Gong and the Uyghurs and Tibetan. They've done what a lot of superpowers do. They poke people in the eye. And then they've sort of responded tit for tat, and you still have to say, "Oh, when you see a commentator, you look at them, look the basis up, and you realise that there's a lot of toing and froing here." I'll deal with that. One of the key analysis points is that when they sort of show the who's related to whom, who's the son of this, and stuff like that, for every point you say, on one aspect you can see that these people will be compromised in decision making because they've got their own people in power in China. But the fundamental thing is that it's like a family business, a family business has some plus points, i.e. that you can talk to people in a way, and there's a communication line in a way, but then ultimately when it comes to tough decisions where they have to actually pivot on a value and change their value, they can't, they've got it stuck. And obviously haven't recruited, it's not a meritocracy if you've got everyone's a relative of various things. I don't think, also just getting back on the China stuff, that there's this full understanding of the long concern of the state of how things are seen. And it really goes back. And I'm no China authority. I've only just read a whole heap of books about astronomy and science and stuff like that. Now, it really goes to a different view of heaven, the heavens. And in the West, we had the heavens as very much a separate place, or a structured place where the heaven was somewhere else. A sign of the heavens would be a sign that in future, a warning, a portent, which is, okay, there, so this, something happens. So you, in the West, it's, you've got to make sure this happens in future. Whereas the Chinese, the way that I read it, they view something, it's sort of like an instant scorecard. It's very much more instant. So if something happens, it's an instant rebuke. It's sort of like the heaven is sort of like holding up dancing with the stars, numbers, how you're doing it. And so what happened is that I think I read a book on comets. It was very important that the Chinese astronomers saw the comet first, and if they saw a comet, it was much better to suppress the view of a comet. And this led to quite literally the castration of the astronomers. A lot of the Chinese, or the Chinese astronomers at the time when the Jesuits came in, had been castrati for a long time. And being castrated, they were then neutralized and able to integrate with the Chinese emperors. And their actual precise ethical scientific structure of knowledge wasn't as strong. Now, this obviously doesn't apply to China today, but the ability of a scientist to be free and independent is slightly different. You know, the fact that, say, if we had a directive to a Chinese an institute which wasn't a defense institute, which said you can't publish, that would be on the evening news. It certainly is completely leaking thing. That being said, this control, propaganda control, does exist in some of our backwater, our own Australian backwater institutions in education. There's very much a pushing of scientists away, such that you have regimented teachers who are afraid and won't speak their mind or won't do the right thing or will go along with the situation. But getting back to the astronomers, the castrated astronomers, when I always say Cardinal Ricci, which is the Italian for curly, but he's a Jesuit person. He came across, and he was able to see that they were still producing the scientific instruments, but they had moved the capital, I think, to a southern point, and they were still producing the scientific instruments, but they hadn't changed the astrolabes. They hadn't changed the degrees on the astrolabes, and because they had lost the ability to do it. And so Cardinal Ricci knew that was there, and so he was able to predict an eclipse where the Chinese people, the castrated class, couldn't predict an eclipse, and that got a Western foothold in that area. But the entire there's been a long historical relationship way before communism or anything like that, to do with cover-up. But the cover-up is not because it's not because of the there's obviously covers up. Any cover up is a cover up, but I don't think it's not necessarily criminal. It's in the context of the way that events are seen to reflect on a leader. Whereas, if we saw a volcano, I'm not saying that the Chinese would see this, but if we saw a volcano, if we saw a virus outbreak, or something like that, we would attribute it to natural causes. And then it's only after a while the empathy and stuff like that, and then we would go backwards and say whether people foresaw them. So that's a sort of a certain way. But getting back to the United States, there was a big cause for concern, but you couldn't sort of email people and say, "Oh, are you scared?" You know, because that's the worst thing you could possibly do. But there is some good news in the United States in that the number of cases isn't growing exponentially. The rate of growth has just leveled off. It's still unthinkably large, And still numbers are really huge. Yeah, I think, 600,000. There's a lot of cases to manage and get your testing up like that. But it has leveled off. It's still growing. So it's not apocalyptic. So that is positive, and the people are treating them, and there is civil rest. There is this show of angst and democracy, or not democracy in action. It's the I suppose from the outside, what is concerning is that people can't tend to land a blow. If something's stupid, they can't assign it and say, well, thanks a lot. That's got a stupid value of 1 out of 10. I'm just going to leave it there. No, they have to try and argue whether it's stupid or not, and it goes. It's sort of like it's sort of very hard to watch, and because there's a lot of great things about the productive capacity of America, in terms of that they have gone certain directions, incredibly wealthy country. So look, there is good news for America, although it's sort of like a factor of 100 higher than you. It's flattened the curve at a factor of 100 higher, and I don't know, in terms of the deflection of blame, it's a lot easier to lead by deflecting blame. It's just that it's just really, really, really hard. Hard to watch, but look, Australia has had embarrassing moments where we've sort of let our guard down and done dumb things. Like before World War II, we were the dumbest country in terms of sort of playing into the Japanese story. We were just pretty dumb, but people tend to overlook it. And we've done some really dumb things in terms of that. We had a big cruise ship, and we just let them disembark. And there's really an attitude to say, oh well, we've made a mistake. Let's get on with them. And this, for the United States, it's a dreadful lesson, but it's. For sure as hell, I don't think anyone in the United States is going to quibble about finding pandemic cures and ensuring that that whatever comes up, it's going to be less than an 18-month window to get it. I think as Korea, Taiwan, and Singapore learnt from as have been prepared before the by SARS, I think this will save us in the long term. So I hope that's a comfort, and people in the United States will know my general, just very quiet. Yeah, I think the Australian version of it is I'm checking the fence line. Why are you there? Why are you looking at over at my property? Not looking at your property, just checking the fence line. Do you want a hand, mate? I notice you've got a few roos in the top paddock, that type of stuff. Now, getting across to Germany. So I haven't said very much helpful there. But getting across to Germany is a very good news story. So it's a good news story in two aspects. One is it's looking at it objectively, it's got a very low death rate. And sort of the analysis I've read is by having a federal system, you've got dispersed and responsive health care, which really goes to the heart of things in terms of we have sort of built up like you gain a certain efficiency. You're running day to day. Like in Australia, we have amalgamated all our health districts, and so we've got these huge health districts. And the what was efficient buying was on paper to someone who didn't listen. They had, yeah, they brought in an efficient buying system, but it didn't work. If I can just put a sort of a story along the lines, and it won't really go to it. I had a, I was in a high tech company, and we were bought out by Nortel. The Nortel managers came in, and I was building a robotics station. And for the robotics station, I had to get water jet cut 10 mil thick anodized slabs of aluminium. I had to do it a couple of months ahead, and it would arrive on time and schedule. There'd be no fuss. And I had a number of unusual practices in terms of that. I would always, if the money allowed, build two of everything, because in general there would be a delay and they might be able to get me one. So I'd at least be able to build one up, and I could get the one built and the other one would be arriving and be come online, say a week or two later, and the commissioning would go through and stuff like that. I got a phone call saying, oh, it's got to be a delay, blah, blah, blah. And the Nortel manager grabbed the phone and said, let me handle it. You're fired. Bling! And, of course, and they said, oh, okay, well, where's the other thing? I said, well, there's only one manufacturer in Australia who can do it, and you've just fired them. So I picked up the phone and said, oh, don't worry. And we just moved ahead. And to a certain extent, they sort of modernised and Americanised the hospitals. And the hospitals purchasing, and so the basic humanistic old world approach worked in certain ways. I don't know. I know this because our next door neighbour was a hospital purchase them. So now, but the problem now is that Australian hospitals are like monopoly, and I think we've got 23 bought up by the Chinese government in New South Wales. It's sort of like agony, agony to come across, and it is big business, unthinkable stuff. And of course, we've got universal health care, sort of like it's sort of like a combination of Cuba and Great Britain and stuff like that. And basically, you know about the health care. So getting back to Germany, in terms of, and Germany has 8 beds per 100,000. Is that right? It can't be 8 beds per 100,000. 8 beds per 1,000 people. Okay, that can't be big. For 8 beds, as opposed to Australia's 3, to the United States 2. Now, the WHO organisation puts it at 2, but when you click on it, click on the data point, it says 2.9. So that the one thing they haven't got is a rounding number. I suppose you could do it like that. And there is a bit of a difference in terms of speaking to of just a sheer number of beds. There are hospital beds, sort of like commercially renter beds in private hospitals, which are a service there, but they're not connected into rapid response. They're there to take sort of paying patients who want a room and want breakfast. There's sort of a halfway between a hospital, stuff like that. And this happened in Italy. Italy has their real beds, hospital beds, which are in the public hospitals. In the private hospitals, they're more like medical dormitories, I think, maybe. So the people go in. So Germany's got a very low death rate. The other aspect is that Germany's number of people infected is actually going down. They've got a large number of people, but they're testing a lot, catching a lot, testing intelligently, and therefore they've picked up a lot of the mild cases, and they're going down. So the American caseload is still going up. So the rate of increase has stopped, and Germany's gone down. I think America's 20 to 30,000 a day, Germany's 2,000 a day, and that's gone down. So there's certain aspects of it. Now, reading, there was a University of Bonn, I read, tested the Bonn community in general and came up with the fact that at this hotspot that I think there's something like 6% of the population had COVID, and 12% have COVID, and 12% already have had it and it's gotten over it. So they've said, well, hang on, we're just going to do a proper scientific study here and get a handle on it rather than guess the number of people in the hotspot. So that's a large load of the population to get across. But Germany's looking at positive signs, and they've got a low death rate. Apparently, there's also a skill factor in incubation, whatever it is, and the actual obesity, high blood pressure of the population. But however, there is this idea of there is a sensitivity to control the pressure. So again, I've read, so bear in mind that I do a lot of reading, but if I see anything, I do check this as a good little scientist, do check the sources. But apparently, it's credible that you can there's nothing funny about it, of course. You can overinflate someone and cause critical lung damage. I don't know whether that's a thing, but you can imagine that this effect. If you've got someone who is, you can imagine someone on a ventilator is going to take a long time on that ventilator, and the damage will be cumulative. It can only go so long. So just on the ventilators in Australia, there was this gasp in terms of that we had the what we called a clear line of sight to various ventilators. That is, we knew the people had seen the ventilators in the factory and had said, there, that, put the Aussie sticker on it and saying, there it is, and organise the Qantas flight there, turn up, Qantas jet lands, it's there, saying, I know you've got a photograph of them there, but they're no longer there. And so we've sort of been swiped of ventilators. And then there's the she'll be right attitude, sort of going to the shearing shed and getting any old pump and stuff like that. And you can imagine that in your hospital you have a proper ventilator that's put past your second proper ventilator, and then I suppose going down the track you get the veterinary ventilator, which they're not using, but they were saying, "Oh, we've got so many ventilators stored in vets, and then of course you can the shed one, and you'd say, oh my god. And you've got the trained people and the ability to, you know, so your ventilator also has to be able to be sanitized from the outside. So what's happened is that I love the word pivot. We've been able to pivot some. Oh, am I talking about Australia at the moment? I may as well talk about Australia. So get various companies as we're doing 3D printing and getting the electronics and being able to produce in time. I think we need 5,000 ventilators all up in the country at our peak, at the current peak coming along, and we've got 2,200, and we can produce 2,000 locally, there's all this, there's a whole lot of know-how embedded in how to do it, and technology and vision that you want to have a optical probe apparently going down in it. I've been on the ventilator for the heart operation and stuff like that, and it's sort of like it's waking up with the tube down your throat going, and it's, you know, quickly they take it out. And I must admit, for a long while, for the oxygen, it really cut my nose, and I was thinking, far out, all this quality control, and I've got a bit, and it turned out that the actual nose piece was upside down, and there's a rib which cuts it, so it took a while to go. That's a digression there. So there's hope that the people will go, and of course the Australian military. This is a side. This is just to give you a background. So I know the a friend at school is the head of the Australian military liaison, or whatever it is, for up in Canberra. And so there's things like the mask factory early on was double, triple capacity. It's got no effect. Tripling the capacity of the Australian mask factory has got no effect, but they initially had the various personnel going down, and there's a sort of a bit of a I think there is objection. The show of the military as a propaganda tool, so they showed these people arriving at the Shepparton factory, but they showed footage of them travelling in troop transports, and sort of like, hang on, that's not the way that normally it would happen. You'd rock up I could guarantee that you'd rock up in a bus for, like, I don't know if you've, or there's occupational health and safety, road conditions and stuff like that. I know at least the local councils used to put up a stink if you had too much heavy machinery going up a dirt track or something like that. So, and it's quite expensive to do it. So I doubt they would have done it. And they said, "Oh yes, we're going to deploy the Australian military to greet people coming off the plane and put them on the buses." So, the government, when you arrive from overseas, they've sort of, you know, some wise cracker that sort of didn't self-isolate. And so what they do is that they take people from overseas and put them in. Now, Australia has something like 2/3 from overseas. So, like, imagine 2/3 of your cases, you know where they're coming from. And they test them. And So the Australian staff has been, I think it's been under 100 for about a week, 100 cases for the whole country per week there. And for people who've been over the ex-Aussies, you'll know that it's sort of biosecurity is just part of the way of life because of the risk to crops and the fact that we can do it. I think we had a horse flu possibly 10 years ago. It came across, or and we did actually have a bat flu called a Hendrovirus, and it was it was from bat to horse to human, and so we lost two high profile trainers due to Hendrovirus, and that caused a big panic, a big panic, and so there's that general thing. So there's been a lockdown, and of course, asking Australians to stay at home, they just do that more naturally. You know, there's a big stress and stuff like that. So the actual statistical modelling has said that there hasn't been 100% compliance with lockdown. However, there has been 90%. So the curve, basically the modelling. So what's happening is that the number of cases in Australia, I think, peaked around 3,200 active cases. So we've got 6,400 cases. 6,400 cases. And so it's now under 3,000 cases, 3,800 cases in Australia. And it's going down week on week. And, of course, something similar to this has happened in Singapore early on, and it's just you're waiting to make your mistake to get across. Now, the good news for Germany is that it's got the same shape as the Australian one, except we're further down the curve, so we've got our big lump, and then it's going down sort of steadily, so the total number of cases. So the total number of positive tests historically is now 6,400, and that's the total number of positive tests. But then the total number of active cases is 2,840, slowly going down day upon day. And there's a few things like that, and so it's I think it's a bit all out here. I think majority of people are completely staying at home, crossing the street, and stuff like that. And we have everything. I haven't been to the shop for a couple of weeks now. To protect me, my kids go if we drink too much milk. But most things are delivered now. The actual talking to people overseas is very difficult because you don't want to say. It's sort of like a hail damage, stuff like that. You're saying, yeah, everyone in the street's been hail damaged and your car hasn't been hail damaged. And you don't go around saying, oh, I was so shit hot. I parked my car in the patio when I checked the radio. And of course, everyone else didn't check the radio. They were doing other things. And there's sort of no benefit for it. But we're quietly going across now. Of course, the Australian economy is completely tanked. It's just I just can't describe. It's like, so everyone is doing exercise classes by Zoom and stuff like that. What are some of the, it's yoga, strength, Pilates, all by Zoom. So somehow that's doing it. So all the medical stuff is by Zoom, and we've just got MBN in time. So it certainly would have been completely stuffed if we didn't have optical fibre going across, and of course it would have been completely stuffed if we didn't allow competition and allow the Singapore government in to come in and act as a competitor. So we had the basic we had the Australian government, and we wanted another competitor in the Australian marketplace, and so we had another. Oh, look, this is true for everything. So we have this artificial stuff. Oh, look, we do have it. Obviously, Qantas is privately owned, but a lot of this stuff is actually owned by the Singapore government. So we really haven't... We think we've got competition to go across. So the number of cases are going down, there's sort of... It's so small that what is the major problem? Oh, it's the backpackers in Bondi, and truly they just didn't. But they're at an age group, and you can imagine. And I know there's this sort of. The local Australian culture, and it's translated. You know, the Australians will do this. Like, it is a foreign country within the foreign, you know, landed on our shores. It's sort of like that. So it's the backpackers. Another outbreak has been at a wedding in Wollongong, and then there was it's been an outbreak in Tasmania. And to which it was an outbreak in a hospital, and they shut the hospital, doing a deep clean of it. So, apparently, there's this sort of standard, sort of deeply contaminated things. So a cruise ship apparently is one of those things which get deeply contaminated, and it takes, you know, more than a couple of hours of not doing anything for it to die. And so for this hospital, there's two hospitals in Tasmania where they've removed all the staff, cleaned it deeply, and replaced it with the military staff. That's just over the top. And the people really objected because they said it all started from someone, the staff having a dinner party. Of course, that wasn't true, and that sort of got into Twitter and all that. That type of stuff. Then our local area. In general, there's been sufficiently few people. Oh, it's hard to say. Once people start going to the beach, you get this imitating behaviour. So what they do is they fly drone footage over the beach, and rather than they do find individual people, but if it goes over, they close the entire beach. And this happened with the various places were left open, and then the people refused, flouted it, and then it closed the whole lot. So in a lot of country towns, and I suppose the other aspect is that there's some isolated communities which the only time they see a doctor is when they fly in an aircraft, once a month. So they've closed off those communities. It's already, I don't know if you knew, it was already illegal. There's There's a large, you know, like a huge section of Central Australia, pretty much the size of France, which is Aboriginal land, which is equivalent to private property. You could go there, but you'd have a lot of conversations as to why you're there. This is before anything, and this is to stop. And yeah, look, even there's these huge king parrots. So these are completely red birds with green wings. Sort of come back up for some reason. But then, sort of, I don't know whether it's the time of the year. They're not noisy, and various things. We did. I'll just close it off. So Australia is doing good, but we are tending to be quiet and compassionate. And there's this sort of like this unfolding disaster of Indonesia above us. And they had made claims that they were immune to the coronavirus due to prayer, that the prayer had successfully stopped coronavirus. And so and that is, I think it's 1,700 islands which make up Indonesia. So that's the logistics. I mean, isolation, it's good. You could actually do some of the islands, but a lot of there's little ferry boats going across everywhere in Indonesia. It's sort of zigzagging. Communication is difficult. And there's, I suppose, in the South Pacific, I should tell you, there's a whole series of South Pacific islands that were coronavirus-free. But then they've just had a big, what we call cyclone. I think you, in other countries, a hurricane go through. And of course, there's all the aid, big Australian Galaxy lifters lifting Australian government aid. Breaks. It's almost tooth breaking to see. It's for film, the aid arriving. Of course, the aid arrives, but then they said, and then they took away the 15 Australians in Vanuatu and stuff like that. So you sort of see that there's sort of we're going to have to send an aircraft anyway across there to get the Australians out, so we may as well absolutely chock it full. Full of aids. Now these Galaxy lifters are, four times the lifting capacity of. Like, I don't know what they fit inside them. Like this huge, if you're used to the Hercules, it sort of looks like the shed door coming out. The Galaxy lifters, huge thing coming out of it. So hopefully those islands can stay coronavirus free. And of course the idea of these huge cruise ships going to the island it's just appalling to think of it. So let's do a summary. One is, I hope this has calmed down, given a little insight into how quiet Australia is. There's as much corruption as there's overseas. There are complete and utter nutcases here, as would be overseas. I could imagine it's easier to be calm with 10, 50, 40 cases. Now, per day, and it's easier to be calm now and have enough breathing space to think that we might get enough ICU, and we've just got enough time to train nurses and stuff like that, but it's sort of like we're training just to save the Australian population. And I just shudder to think what's going to happen in Indonesia and all the other countries. Now, of course, there's this worry about the flu shot. You add tropical diseases to it, like what? What does COVID plus malaria equal like? So I think there are four strains of malaria, three strains of malaria up in Papua New Guinea. Like a lot of that area has malaria as well. So there's that overall worry. So I hope this has been a bit of a ramble to get across and given you a bit of a picture and the general good news and the fact that the sort of the understanding that you're not that there may be communication, but as you like it, it's sort of a bit like the bushfires. The last thing you want to do is someone has got a bushfire coming up to them and they've got a single landline and you phone up to say, are you okay? And of course that's the worst thing perhaps to do, because they need to phone in what's happening or phone their local friends and stuff like that as it's coming up. So I'm definitely not sending emails. I just really hope this calms the farm. So the States, I'm sure they'll sort things out, and they're definitely going through it. And remember, it's really New York and a couple of the 50 states have gone through. So that's a pretty amazing. So even though the United States have got they've got other large areas which perhaps haven't done, and they've been able to. You know, they've got 50 little petri dishes to organise, and the worst of it, and I don't want to jinx you, but the worst of it seems to have stabilised. Germany is, you've got over the knob, you're on that, if you look at the Australian curve of recoveries in the worldometer, we've got over the knob, this peak, a knob, it goes down really steeply. I don't know, it's something to do with counting statistics, and then it travels off. And I think Germany's going to be in that that travel off peak, and it's definitely done something right in having fewer deaths. And I just really hope that. As people get experience, like you can imagine, if you've got you get a lot of training in incubating and stuff like that, and you learn all the lessons as you're doing it. So if you can imagine additional factors like fatigue pushing it up, experience pushing it down, fatigues can be cured. And experience there, so hopefully they'll be able to get on top of the this situation. So that's my general hope. So just as well, and I'll just put that through, and we'll see how that goes for you as a podcast. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.